I please the court. I'm John Cappell from the Appellate Staff, Civil Division, U.S. Department of Justice, and I'm representing the appellant, United States of America. I will attempt to reserve 5 minutes or so of my time for rebuttal. I'd like to begin my argument by quoting two key sentences from the district court's opinion found at page 40 of the excerpts of record. The district court stated, "The government is correct that the uncontested evidence allows the court to conclude that SH received a brain injury at birth and that this was the injury that resulted in her cerebral palsy. Indeed, it is undisputed that plaintiff SH's premature birth is the cause of her cerebral palsy." The district court erred in not recognizing that this was essentially dispositive.
I have one question about the nature of the claim that maybe both of you can clarify, and that is whether the claim or the theory is that the underlying negligence occurred in the United States at the outset when the parents were advised that they could safely go to Spain, or whether the theory is something else.
The theory is clearly that the underlying negligence occurred in the United States when they were told, when she was cleared to go to Spain. As a matter of fact, the record also reflects in the undisputed facts and in the district court's opinion that there was no negligence in Spain and by any of the doctors or hospital personnel.
So under your theory of the case, a lawsuit cannot be maintained for any negligence that occurred in the United States at the outset.
That is correct, Your Honor, because the injury occurred in Spain, and that is the
opposite. I'm asking, I know your legal theory, I'm just asking the practical effect. The practical effect of your position is that, assuming for purposes of my question that the doctor at the Air Force Base in the United States was completely negligent and reckless in sending this young woman to Spain, she has no recourse against the United States.
Well, that is correct.
I mean, I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Make sure there's not some other action of recourse that she might have.
Because under 2680K, under the foreign country exception, the relevant point is that the injury occurred in Spain, and there was a single catastrophic injury in Spain that occurred with her premature birth that included the cerebral palsy that was ultimately conclusively diagnosed several years later in the United States.
So the place of the negligence is not dispositive, is what you're saying. The place of the injury is all that matters.
That is correct under 2680K, Your Honor.
Yes, so let me ask you this. What cases do you cite for the proposition that the injury here was actually suffering? There's a lot of words in there. It sounds like suffering. I mean, so there are some cases.
Well, it really, Sosa is the lead case.
All the cases that you have that instruct us that the injury here was suffered in Spain.
Well, one example is the Tenth Circuit's decision in a case called Manaman, which is cited in our briefs, where the injury the government failed to diagnose the plaintiff's tuberculosis in Taiwan, and the court found that was subject to 2680K.
But that's not this case, right?
Well,
the child who back to the United States, and it was, what Southern State remind me?
South Carolina,
that it was determined that this syndrome had manifested itself.
Yes, Your Honor, and the key word there is manifested itself. What the district court did was it confused the occurrence of the injury with the ultimate manifestation and diagnosis of the injury.
Well, I'm just looking for that magic piece that you have, the silver bullet, that says suffered, the injury was suffered in Spain because it's, and I have to bow.
I agree, Your Honor, that there is no case directly on point. And that
first impression.
Yeah, well, we believe that it's controlled by the logic of Sosa.
What significance, if any, do we give to the fact that Congress in 2860 used the word suffered rather than occurred? That is to say, if the injury occurred in some other places, if the injury was suffered,
I don't think in 2680 case says that. I think 2680
Sosa says it.
Oh, it says Sosa. Well, we believe that Sosa uses a lot of these terms essentially indistinguishably where the injury was received and where
the statute says any claim arising in a foreign country.
Exactly.
Okay, so the difference between suffered and occurred ought not be of any importance to us, should it?
We don't think that there is any significance.
Counsel, I think I'd like you both to discuss the following question, and that is the significance of the administrative claim, because the underlying administrative claim was filed while the parents were still in Spain, and at that time they already apparently knew enough to be saying that child had suffered, I think they said, catastrophic neurological injuries. So is that kind of the end of the matter?
Well, yes, Your Honor, we believe that certainly should be. Not only did they say catastrophic neurological injuries, but they also specifically said cerebral palsy in their assessment.
Which was not a 100% certainty after the premature birth, but was a foreseeable manifestation at that time.
That's correct, Your Honor. And they also said the same thing immediately upon their return to the United States when they were seeking special help for their child. They said on the form that she had suffered from cerebral palsy since birth.
So the claim may have arisen even if all the damages were not yet clear.
Yes, Your Honor. From an accrual standpoint, we would certainly agree.
We don't want to deal with statute of limitations.
No, there's no reason to do that here because this is not, the key point is that this is not about accrual. This is about 2680K, about the foreign country exception. And I would also note that
the administrative claim that was filed while the couple was in Spain made reference to cerebral palsy.
Yes, Your Honor, it did.
And the response to that, I take it from, making opponent's argument, but I think the response to that has been, well, it was just our lawyer who put that together as a protective or something or another, but I think that is what it actually did say. It's exhibit 3T.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I'd also further note that two of the plaintiff SH's treating physicians, Dr. Shales and Dr. Delgado, also told the plaintiff's parents in Spain that the child was suffering from cerebral palsy. Now, Dr. Griesmer, their expert witness, said that it was too early to make that diagnosis. But again, the key point is that he was talking about the diagnosis.
In other words, let's assume that something happened in Spain that eventually caused a cerebral palsy. Does that mean and no doctor could tell at the time? They had no knowledge that there was cerebral palsy, that it didn't manifest itself until 2 years later. For purposes of this statute, would that make any difference as to where the claim arose?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't. It would still have arisen in Spain. Again, there would be an accrual question as to the discovery of the injury.
Right, because for purposes of this case, we have the government suffered an unfavorable verdict below,
So it seems to me with respect to disputed factual issues, we have to take them in the light most favorable to your opponent. So what the parents knew or didn't know and what the doctors thought or didn't think are evidentiary matters, are they not? In other words, couldn't the district judge have found on this record that the parents, that no doctor really gave a definitive diagnosis of cerebral palsy before they came back to the United States?
Yes, again, but again, that's the definitive diagnosis.
No, I understand. You say that's irrelevant, but when I start arguing about what doctors told them and what they knew when, my problem is I think there may be contrary inferences to be drawn from the record. They may not be important to your case, but you lost the votes and the judge didn't find it in your favor on these things.
Well, we believe that both as a matter of law and as a matter of fact, this decision is flawed. It should be reversed. But on the law, it is incorrect, and it's clearly erroneous on the record.
It's the second one, and I don't want you to extend your argument. When you say it's clearly erroneous on the record, do you mean the jurisdictional decision by the trial court or the awarding of damages if it has jurisdiction?
Well, it's the jurisdiction. We're focusing primarily on jurisdiction.
Now I understand your argument.
Yeah.
So, I guess, is it fair to summarize your view of this case and say that a child who is born as a result of negligence is nonetheless barred from any claims under the foreign government exception? I mean, the deafness exception, the foreign country exception. So long as the injury resulting from that negligence occurs abroad.
Yes, Your Honor.
Harshest that the world may be.
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position.
Why did the United States take such a harsh position?
Well, Your Honor,
they contemplate this case in writing that exemption.
Congress basically wrote this exception very broadly, and it was
for other purposes, right? For other reasons.
Well, it was concerned about choice of law matters and problems with applying foreign law. Yes, Your Honor, but that is not. It's
still just my tier two interpreter side.
Yes, Your Honor.
You want to reserve your side.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll punch you again. We'll hear from Mr. Stevens.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Stevens. I represent the appellees in this matter. Addressing the two topics that the court has raised. First, I don't think the analysis is so simple as the government presents it, as that to suggest that the child was born in Spain, therefore that is the injury, because that is not the law. That's not the law under Sosa. That was not the common law.
I would argue that if you didn't have all this evidence that, in fact, that's where the injury occurred, and then, on top of it, you stipulate, basically, that cerebral palsy was the result of the birth. And then, on top of that, you have the administrative claim being made in Spain saying that the cerebral palsy had happened in Spain. I mean, it seems pretty grim for your side of view. Why should we take a different view?
Well, let me address those seriatim, the emotion aside. Emotion aside. The fact is that cerebral palsy does not necessarily result from a premature birth.
No, it's a syndrome.
It's a syndrome, that's right. And it does not develop until the child is about at the 18-month to 2-year level, where we start to see as the neurological system develops.
But in Spain, you already were filing administrative claims?
Well, jumping to that.
Why isn't that a form of judicial admission that you can't walk away from? Because it's a necessary part of bringing a lawsuit against the United States to file the administrative claim. And once you do that, why aren't you bound by what it says, which is we are in Spain, our child was born with catastrophic neurological problems, including cerebral palsy. Why isn't that something that nobody can walk away from?
I think that you could treat it as some sort of evidence, but it's evidence that has been looked at in the entire perspective.
Why is it evidence rather than a form of admission?
Because the nature of the claim form is to put the government on notice of what the possible damages could be. In this particular case, they had two doctors who were unqualified to diagnose cerebral palsy, Dr. Shields and Dr. Delgado. They are family practitioners, not pediatric neurologists. And
the point is that they must have known something was going on. A normal birth with a normal baby, people don't start filing claims of any sort with good doctors or bad doctors.
Well,
there must have been some problem that caused this.
To get into medicine, the baby did have certain problems as a result of prematurity. And the reason why you can't make a diagnosis.
You knew those problems, and nobody contests this now either, arose because the baby was prematurely born.
Right, and the district court noted.
And your theory of the case is that the negligence was sending the mother off to a place where the baby was likely to be premature.
Right, and there's an obvious risk.
So don't all the injuries arise from the premature birth? Arise from, not manifest themselves, but arise from the premature birth?
No, and here's the reason why. Because, and the medical evidence is very clear on this, the symptoms that the baby had between birth and about 18 months all were the result of prematurity, not necessarily
pregnancy. I understand your medical contention. I'm asking a different question. You don't contend that the United States did anything wrong after sending her to Spain, correct?
I think they did the best they could in
Rome. No, I mean, your claim of negligence is that the negligence occurred in the United States when they sent her to Spain.
Yes.
And the other part of your claim is that the injury occurred because the baby was prematurely born in Spain.
Cerebral palsy ultimately is the result of
right.
Except I guess the thing that bothers me about your claim, sort of from a logical perspective, is that once the baby was born prematurely, even though she didn't yet have diagnosable cerebral palsy, it was inevitable at that point. There was nothing that someone could do, as I understand the record, that would prevent it. So it was at the time of birth, even though it hadn't manifested, it was an inevitable development for this child. That's how I understood what happened here.
I think the evidence leads to that. However, I think the evidence is also very clear. The law is very clear as we apply the evidence to the law, and that is there is no injury until there is an appreciable injury that's manifested.
Really? Let's take mesothelioma. You get it, as I understand it, from breathing in asbestos.
Yes.
Many people don't get it. Mesothelioma from breathing in asbestos. Many people do. So I go to great states in Mexico. New York, 45 years later, I developed mesothelioma. Where did my claim arise?
At the time of the manifestation of appreciable injury.
Really?
Yes, under California law.
No, California. All those cases you cite deal with accrual of statutes of limitations.
Well, I would go.
They don't say where the claim arose. So my question is, under those circumstances, could I really sue Johns Manville in New York saying that my claim arose?
Where personal jurisdiction might be, I don't know at this fast.
Well,
but let me address
the claim arising is a personal jurisdiction kind of term. That's something we find out in personal jurisdiction cases all the time.
Right. You find it in accrual cases, you find it in personal jurisdiction cases, you find it under SOSA.
Well, now you don't find where the claim arose in accrual cases. What you find in accrual cases is when the claim arose. My question is, when we talk about where the claim arose, we do that in personal jurisdiction cases all the time, don't we?
You do, but I would also go further and say, if you look at SOSA, So the whole rationale of SOSA is if we look at what Congress was doing in 1946, what did arising in or arose in mean in 1946? And arose in had a meaning that could apply to many different situations. It arose, the phrase itself, arose as part of the common law and using borrowing statutes for purposes of figuring out the statute of limitations. So in
assuming you get an adverse decision from this panel, is to file a petition for the sojourner and speak to the United States Supreme Court on behalf of this child. The result in this case is so harsh, so unjust, that the court should reverse its decision in SOSA. To restate the proposition that the cause of action arose in the United States when the negligence occurred in transferring this child to his parents to a country, military base, and then inadequacy base to handle pregnancies. That those kinds of things can happen.
Well, if we did get an adverse decision, I'm sure we would raise it. I suspect this case is heading to the U.S. Supreme Court, regardless of how this court rules. I mean, this is, you see, it's a very important case to the government.
But there was no, not so harsh, that kind of a position.
Because, I mean, what I have not found is a case that meaningfully or at all discusses the SOSA principles in the context of medical malpractice, where it seems maybe to have a different shape to it.
Well, you're right, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, what I wanted to address, one of the court's questions that the court posed to my colleague, the court asked, is there any case post SOSA that addresses this provision in the context of medical malpractice? And my colleague cited Manniman, which is a 1967 Tenth Circuit case. And Manniman,
not post SOSA.
It's certainly not post SOSA. And I think it was, given SOSA right now, what we know is it was decided incorrectly. It would be decided differently now, because SOSA teaches us that you look at where the injury occurred, not where the wrongful act occurred. And under the common law in 1946, where the injury occurred is where there was appreciable harm. In the vast majority of cases, we know the appreciable harm at the very moment it happens. The air crash in Richards, the car crash.
Mesothelioma case, didn't the injury occur when I breathed in?
No.
The asbestos?
No, because first of all, it is possible to be exposed to asbestos and not develop mesothelioma.
Possible to be hit on the head and not develop a concussion. But if I'm hit on the head in San Francisco, then my concussion doesn't manifest itself until I get to Arizona. Didn't my claim arrive? Didn't my injury occur in San Francisco?
I can see that argument, but I think it would be a very unusual concussion that it waited so long before it manifested. Also, if you got hit that hard to cause a concussion, you had an appreciable injury in San Francisco.
Well, that's when we get back to Judge Graber's question.
Right, that's my problem.
Your client, the kids, the minor, had appreciable injuries in Spain, did she?
Well, I disagree with that. Because the appreciable injuries that she had in Spain, the seizures, and that sort of thing, breathing problems, were all the result of prematurity. As a matter of fact, all the doctors who are qualified to talk about the issue, including the governor,
different costs.
Your claim sought $100 million in personal injury damages for catastrophic neurological injuries, seizures, and cerebral palsy. That was the administrative claim on which this lawsuit is based, and it was filed when your clients were in Spain. And I guess I have difficulty viewing that as merely some evidence to weigh with other evidence,
well,
but it's the predicate for the lawsuit.
Right, and one of the things that I wanted to address, we shifted topics, so I wanted to get back to that because I think that's important to the court, I understand that. And that is that when two unqualified doctors, as the patient, I don't know if they're qualified as a spinal doctor. I'm not saying I'm qualified as a spinal doctor.
The problem, as it turns out, is several qualified doctors were pretty good at diagnosing precisely what happened and what would happen.
Well,
they said this child has cerebral palsy. What's incompetent about that?
Well, let me make sure
your theory of the case.
Your Honor, let me make it clear. I'm not saying that they're incompetent. I'm saying they're not qualified to make the diagnosis of cerebral palsy. And then,
why would you argue that?
Because
it turns out they were eminently qualified to make that. Doesn't this child have cerebral palsy?
She does, as it turns out, but at that time they weren't making a diagnosis. As a matter of fact, they were jumping
your argument because of the fact that in your very administrative claim you said the child had cerebral palsy.
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems to me like you're winding yourself up in this kind of hysteria of argument, trying to persuade us that the child didn't have cerebral palsy, but he did have cerebral palsy. I can't follow up.
Well, let me see if I can make it clear.
I'm just going to warn up tunnels and I can't find my way out of your argument.
Well, let me see if I can make it more clear for you, Your Honor. The two doctors, two treating physicians, did not make a diagnosis of cerebral palsy. They did not make that diagnosis. Shields and Delgado did not say that. What they did say is that they thought she had it based on a report from Dr. Lisa Smith, who is a pediatric neurologist. And how they drew that conclusion is frankly beyond me, because Dr. Smith, when she examined the child, she said she can't make the diagnosis of cerebral palsy.
You're not suggesting this child got cerebral palsy in South Carolina, do you?
I'm saying no. It was manifested in South Carolina.
All that happened is it manifested.
Yeah. Well, she developed to the point where the symptoms were not developed in the
beginning. It was caused by the premature birth.
Yes. Yes, that's an undisputed fact, Your Honor. I see I have a minute and 20 seconds left. I think we've covered the topics that are most important to report, but I would love to answer any more questions.
I would like to add an exclamation point on what I said earlier, but I might ask this court to take a second.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That is if you get an adverse decision.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a short amount of rebuttal time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I really have very little to add to the colloquy.
Let me ask you a question related to Judge Zero's question. You really think the statute was designed to deny access to relief to people in a situation of this kind?
I think that the statute as written clearly covers the situation.
I suspect by Sosa does cover it. My question is, do you really think that was the statutory purpose?
Again, as we've already discussed, I think that a lot of factors went into the crafting of it, such as the foreign law.
Well, the difficulty here is that this case turns entirely on domestic law. All the negligence is alleged to have occurred in the United States by an agent of the United States. The injury didn't occur until somebody went to Spain. So I think all the reasons that one might think that Congress would have passed this statute don't seem to apply to the situation. Having said that, its language seems to apply.
Yes.
So I guess we're stuck with plain language when we have plain language, but I'm sort of asking about statutory purpose. Can you conceive of a statutory purpose of denying this person access to the FCTA?
Well, Your Honor, I would point out that there is a remedy. It's not a judicial remedy. In this situation, the plaintiff can also seek relief under the Military Claims Act, which is just administrative. But so this is the way the statute works.
Does that suggest that, this is kind of coming out of left field, but does the potential for a different avenue of remedies suggest that the parties might profitably make use of our mediation unit to resolve this matter? Or is the legal principle too important?
Your Honor, I believe that the legal principle is too important, and I also believe my understanding is, although I'm not sure this is in the record, but the plaintiff went down that avenue, the Military Claims Act avenue, and was unsuccessful.
Thank you. The case just argued is submitted, and we appreciate both of your arguments. And we stand adjourned.